The Voice of the Cape, 91.3 FM Stereo.
In conversation with Shafiq Morden.
We are in conversation with and we're going to be talking Africa, weekly Africa report in the menu, on the menu. Chad President Idris Deby killed in battle with rebels. What was he doing there? Zimbabwe Parliament votes to scrap presidential running mate rule and some other rules which are quite concerning. And ethnic violence surges in Ethiopia. Online for comment is Dr. Paul Kariuki, Executive Director, Democracy Development Program at the University of KwaZulu-Natal. He is also the convener at the Africa Policy Circle, APC for short. Dr. Paul Kariuki, welcome.
Thank you so much, Shafiq, for having me on the show, and good afternoon to your listeners.
In fact, late yesterday afternoon, as we went on air, Chad President Idris Deby, the news came through that he'd been killed in a battle with Chadian rebels. Idris Deby trying to make sure he could stay another 30 years in power. My question, and I don't know whether you've got the answer, it's sort of almost rhetorical. What was a 68-year-old president doing fighting rebels?
Well, perhaps it's one of those days he felt a little bit better about himself and decided to step in the battlefront, and unfortunately he had to meet his death that way. It's still an unfolding story, so there's very little detail around what really motivated him to go there, except for speculations. Like, as the head of the state, probably he wanted to get into closer to the situation and see what's happening there. But unfortunately he had to meet his death that way, by being exposed to, what we'd call a front line.
Yeah, and it certainly has ended an era, an era in Chad. And, of course, Chad is one of the poorest countries in Africa. I've been there, and I promise you it is. But now he puts his son, or somebody's put his son, in control of the country. So it's not going from worse to better. It's going from worse to worse.
And that's the sad part, Mr. Shafiq, because a country does not belong to a family. And it's also not a kingdom, such that there is succession planning, that it moves from the father to the eldest son. So this is one would want to believe it's a democratic country that is underpinned with democratic values and principles. And so the succession of his son isn't one of those ideals that would want to see on our continent, given that our continent is also riddled with a lot of this kind of, power wrangling that moves from one hand of the family to the next. And so even if it was endorsed by the interim government, it's still a very interim measure, which also in many ways creates room for ongoing instability in the country, because there is very, very much recipe for a coup to take place should the son decide not to step down post the interim period. So it's not even, I would be very hesitant even to say it's a short-term gap measure, because the risks that it exposes the country to are too grievous, given the instability in the country right now due to the insurgencies. But at the same time, also, it's a bad move democratically.
Yeah, I mean, the army is taken over, and Deby's son, Muhammad Idris Deby, swiftly named interim president. He's also an army man, but I mean, they've dissolved the government, the National Assembly, 18-month transitional council, and we know exactly what it means when an army says an 18-month transitional council. Constitution has been put on ice. 14-day mourning period, closure of land and air borders, a curfew. I mean, this is pretty radical just because the leader of the country has died.
And that's one of the things also that qualify my certain member saying it's a very undemocratic move that would have, would not have suspected that would go to that direction. Because the fact that the president has died does not justify the suspension of the constitution of the land. And so there has to be, I would want to believe, I've not studied the constitution of Chad Republic, but I want to believe that there is provisions stipulated there that could perhaps will direct the country in a succession of what needs to happen in the interim should the president, you know, pass on, like in this case. So I'm assuming that that has been overlooked by the military government. And, of course, now it creates a situation of, you know, many unconstitutional challenges ranging from, you know, court issues as well as perhaps ongoing possibilities of civilian suppression. And therefore, it does not seem to be a smart move. And I hope the African Union and regional leaders like ECOWAS will be able to participate in the process in a swift way to try to mitigate any situations that can go, you know, out of hand at this point in time.
I mean, if one looks at commentary about it, political analysts are saying this is technically a coup. But what I think is more concerning about that, and that's already concerning, and this is Al Jazeera reporting, it says that sends a very strong message to France and to Chad's other international partners that they can expect continuity. I think that's the message they're trying to send. Business as usual, whatever that business was. So the rest of the world certainly isn't being very supportive of the people of Chad getting an answer to their problem, which is right now is a military coup scenario.
Yes, and that's one of the disturbing things. As you said, as we started, that Chad is one of the poorest countries on the continent. The last thing that you'd want to see a nation like that, or even Chadians themselves would want to see, is them sinking into more deeper conflict situations that will exacerbate the economic situation that is already worse. And secondly, they get even more exposed to insurgencies that are still taking place around their own country. And therefore, the difficulties of not managing a precarious situation like this predisposes the country to more deeper issues that cannot be, you know, resolved, even on a negotiation table. Here you are talking of a government that is still trying to fight, you know, your Boko Harams and ISS and others in trying to keep peace and stability in the country. You cannot add a democratic challenge on top of that. That just creates a bad precedent.
And let's move on to Zimbabwe. In fact, ironically, yesterday afternoon, I was talking to a Zimbabwean friend who told me, he said, "Shafiq, I've given up." Those were his words. And let's look at what's happening there now. Zimbabwean Parliament has voted to scrap a clause in the constitution on electing vice presidents. But there's a second clause, and this is what worries everybody else more than the vice president one. Senior judges will also now be appointed by the president in consultation with the Judicial Service Commission instead of being subjected to public interviews. Two major reversals politically in Zimbabwe.
Definitely, Shafiq. Again, another unprecedented move on our continent that really goes against democratic principles and values. The move that President Emmerson Mnangagwa has taken, of course, is very clear. He wants to concentrate all political power in the presidency, and that is not useful for a democratic country like Zimbabwe, which have a real rich history of its founding, but has, you know, over the years been challenged and started deteriorating a little bit, you know, towards almost tyrannical and it's becoming even now more dictatorship of our scenario. So the move that the government there has taken doesn't augur well in terms of the gains that you would have suspected that the country would be making, especially in such difficult times of the pandemic. Almost half of the population of the country is outside of the country, struggling to make a living wherever they are on the face of the earth. At the same time, internally, it just strains any possibilities of rebuilding what Zimbabwe used to be, a country where the rule of law was observed and democratic principles were upheld. And so it's an unfortunate situation, and I could empathize with your friend. I hope he will find some energy to not to give up on their country.
No, absolutely. It really is a very, very sad situation. Let's move on to Ethiopia. Ethnic violence surging in Ethiopia. Abiy Ahmed, after such a promising start, is now beginning to realize that one of Africa's biggest countries and one of Africa's most varied countries in terms of ethnicities and geographies is now basically at war with itself.
Yeah, again, another unfortunate occurrence. And the story does not really give much hope as what we are seeing, especially when it involved human casualties. Ethiopia being one of those countries, one of the most populous countries in the continent with over 100 million people, which is, uses a federal system as its ideology in terms of how it governs itself, created from its foundations a recipe for what we are seeing now. Any democracy that is founded along ethnic lines is just a matter of time before it explodes. And what we are seeing in Ethiopia right now is an explosion of the different ethnic groups not getting along together. And because their political system is founded on federalism, the challenges of mitigating such incidences that we are seeing now, and especially conflict-related, are so enormous that you don't even know where to begin. It's one of the challenges that only Ethiopians and Ethiopian government can solve this, because an outsider cannot get into an ethnic battle to try to mediate. And so the tragedy here is that there's going to continue casualties, human casualties, in the foreseeable future until the government of Ethiopia is able to, quell these conflicts and bring some level of sanity in the situation. So there is difficulties right now going on because of this, partly I blame to the political ideology that they pursue that has never worked. Ethiopia is constantly in one form of conflict to the next, and there is very, very little semblance of peace. Well, and as you said, Premier Ahmed, when he came in power, kind of promised some hope, but it doesn't look like that at the moment. And I can only pray that they will get to a place of engaging with the different ethnic groups and coming to a place of normalcy and restore peace.
And of course, I mean, when we're talking ethnic groups in Ethiopia, people, when you look at Ethiopia on the map, it doesn't look like much, but when you start to sort of get into the detailed version of the country, it really overwhelms a person in terms of its size, as you've said, and the size of the groups. I mean, when you look at the Amhara and Oromo groups and the Tigray People's Liberation Front, I mean, this is not small numbers of people. Amhara and Oromo, they go into millions within the country. So it's not, Band-Aid doesn't work here, as you've so correctly said. It has to be deep-rooted change. But I'm sure you'd agree with me. How on earth does one get Ethiopia to be at peace with itself when most of us sitting outside are absolutely powerless?
This is those classic cases where you say it will only take a miracle of a divine intervention to bring things like this to normalcy, because the nature of the conflict itself is so much ethno-driven. And now what we are seeing is a rise of what I would call ethno-nationalism, where now different population groups start exerting their own power, and they start claiming the distinctiveness of their own particular nature and their right to self-rule in their own land, which often exacerbates clashes, you know, and relationships, inter-community relationships. Now, with that, just that description, I don't think there is any country on the face of the world today that has a clear, straight answer on how such are sold, except the people who are involved, Ethiopians, can only solve this. It's a costly conflict because of the human tragedy, but it's also even more costlier because the foundations, or the political foundations of the country, are on federalism, which is really about one ethnic group or group of them deciding that they need to have their own self-rule. Now, you cannot juxtapose that kind of political thinking and working in what you'd want to see as democracy. And I think what Premier Abiy was trying to bring the country back is to some level of democracy where there is consensus building, agreeing on a common vision, and participating as one. But because of the political ethnicization of the country, it is very hard to bring that kind of ideology, a new ideology, over decades of regions that have been ruling themselves. And now you are trying to bring some level of commonality without addressing this, you know, the severity of things like tribal identities, cultural identities, and language. So that, when you see it from that point of view, it becomes a very complex situation to intervene. And even more harder is that African Union is situated there. So it's also interesting to see what African Union will try to do in mitigating this problem just under their nose.
Yeah, I mean, that is of course, another very relevant question. You're right. Mm. African Union's headquarters are in Addis Ababa. What are the Africa's leaders going to say when they fly in for AU meetings to a country that they're visiting that's divided? It's resplendent with so many political ironies.
Exactly. Exactly. And this is where, again, the Commission, the African Union, is really now put on the spotlight again. You know, there's so many ethnic or conflicts, rather, that are taking place on the continent. It has been a little bit quiet. But this one now, this present conflict in Ethiopia, happens right in their headquarters. So they can't afford to keep quiet, and they can't afford to assume it. They will have to do something about it. And, of course, it's, at this point in time, I'm sure discussions are probably happening behind the doors, and we'll get to know in the next coming days what is the AU's position in this as far as mitigating the conflict so that it does not degenerate into a full-blown genocide.
And let's hope something good does come from Ethiopia. It really is such a fascinating country. It's huge, it's massive, it's historical. And as Dr. Kariuki is telling us today, sometimes it's just simply incomprehensible. But Dr. Paul Kariuki, convener Africa Policy Circle, also Executive Director, Democracy Development Program at the University of KZN. As always, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much, Shafiq, for having me on the show.
In conversation.